Osho. Christianity, the deadliest poison, and Zen, the antidote to all poisons. Talks given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 2.
Our beloved Master, there was a monk who had stayed with Yakuzan for 3 years and served as the head cook. Once Yakuzan asked him, "How long have you been here?" 3 years, the monk replied. "I don't know your face at all," said Yakuzan. The monk did not understand what Yakuzan meant, and out of resentment left the monastery. Another monk once said to Yakuzan, "I have a doubt. Please, Master, clear it away." Yakuzan said, "Then come to me at the regular discourse." That night, seated for discourse, Yakuzan addressed the assembly of monks in front of him, saying, "Tonight a monk will clear his doubt away. Where are you? Come up here." The monk arose and came forward. No sooner had he reached the master than Yakuzan knocked him down and immediately returned to his room.
Friends, one sannyasin has asked me, "Cannot be disagree with you, cannot be criticize you, a significant question for everyone. This is not an debating club. Neither your agreement is needed, nor your disagreement. What is needed is your right hearing. If you hear rightly, it will be decisive. Agreement is just a mind thing. And disagreement also the same. Neither of them are going to help you. What is going to help you is to experiment, to experience. But that comes only when you have heard me. The greatest difficulty is to hear rightly, to hear silently. If you are thinking to agree or disagree, then you cannot hear me. Your prejudices are there functioning as a curtain. They will distort everything. I don't ask you to agree with me. And I don't ask you to disagree with me. Our whole approach is beyond the mind. You have to learn how to listen, how to be silent, and let your silence decide. Let your no mind decide. And I know what I am saying to you, your no mind will be in absolute synchronicity with it. I will not use the word agreement. That word belongs to the mind. Neither disagreement. There are two polarities of the mind, positive, negative. Theist, atheist, believer, non-believer. I am trying to approach to your no mind, where it is never a question of choice. No mind functions choicelessly. Once I have approached to the no mind, if you have allowed me, putting your prejudices aside, you won't have to agree or disagree. You will find an immense synchronicity. You will be in absolute harmony with me. And only that harmony can help your evolution. What you will do with agreement? Just a belief will be created. And I am against all beliefs. What you will do with your disagreement? Your prejudice will remain. And your prejudice is your problem. You will remain within the boundaries of your past upbringing, your programming by the family, by the school, by the society, by the church. This is not an intellectual discussing club. This is a place for the seekers. It is a totally different phenomenon that you will come across around the world. Here we are searching to find a deep harmony. If you can be harmonious with me, it is not agreement. You are one with me. Agreement needs two. If you can be harmonious with me, I can transfer much that cannot be said. And only that which cannot be said is going to help your growth. The other night, those Christian monks were here. They behaved in a very mannerly way. But they told on the gate, when asked by Narendra, one man told, I like everything and I have been doing dynamic and kundalini meditation for 4.5 months and I have been immensely helped to drop my tensions, my mind stress. But then I felt suddenly something is missing. And what is missing? Service. Service to the poor. Now this is his upbringing, continuous Christian teaching, which becomes a barrier. although he meditated here with me, but I don't think he was hearing me. You cannot serve anybody unless you have found yourself. Who are you to serve? Your service will be dangerous. You are in absolute darkness and unconsciousness. Out of your unconsciousness, any action is going to be harmful. Let us contemplate a little more about this word service. All the religions have been serving the poor for thousands of years, and poor poverty goes on growing. Is this authentic service? Then in thousands of years, poverty should have disappeared. In fact, you are feeding poverty. Real service will be that the poor should be told that you are being exploited and you have to revolt against the vested interests. Unless the poor understand that their poverty is caused by few people who are exploiting them, sucking their blood, it is not caused by your past lives and bad acts. It is caused by the social system, which depends on exploitation. The religions have to be aware of the fact that you have been doing this service for centuries. What is the result? Because a tree is known by the fruit. If the fruit is rotten, the tree is not worth. Service seems to be a beautiful word to hide an exploiting social structure. Apparently, it looks so good serving the poor. It seems a great virtue. But why the poor are there in the first place? Who has made them poor? On the one hand, you go on serving the poor and converting them to Catholics. The service is not in the service of the poor. The service is to increase the power of the Catholic Church. You go on finding orphans and converting them. How Catholics have increased to 600 million by serving the poor. The service is motivated. If you are really interested to destroy poverty, you will look in the roots. You treat only symptoms, giving food to the poor or clothes to the poor. How it is going to help? It will only keep them survival level, and it will allow the vested interests to continue exploiting them. You see the vicious circle. The capitalists go on donating to the church. The church goes on helping the poor at least to live, because laborers and slaves are needed. Even slaves were fed by their masters. That was not service. If you don't feed your horse, if you don't feed your cow, you will lose much money. If you don't feed the poor, the capitalist will disappear. Who is going to work for him? Whom he is going to exploit? So it is a very cunning game. The rich goes on donating a small portion of his exploitation to the church. The church goes on upbringing the orphans, aboriginals, poor people, to the survival level. They are needed alive, because without them the whole system will collapse. So on the one hand, the capitalist goes on in charity, giving money. On the other hand, he goes on exploiting the poor. And between the both, the priest has his own percentage. He is a mediator. So he is living beautifully. Millions of missionaries around the world, but they are serving the exploiters in the name of service. I don't want to be in this vicious game. I want poverty to be completely removed. There should be no person who needs service. A society that needs service is sick. But his prejudice about service has prevented him from hearing me. I am reminded of a case in Jesus' life. Most probably it is simply a mythology. Not most probably, it is certainly a mythology. Jesus brings back Lazarus from death. Now the question is Lazarus going to live forever? He will die again. So Jesus has given him two deaths instead of one. The arithmetic is absolutely clear. He will suffer poverty and he will die one day again. But I don't think this happened. Because if it was true, why Jesus could not perform any miracle on the cross? On the cross, he became angry with God. He shouted, "Have you forsaken me?" Felt utterly helpless. This man who used to raise the dead, who used to walk on water, could not fly with the cross. It is absolutely inconsistent with the man's miracles. He could not manage any miracle on the cross. And that was the place where he was expected. Then Jews would have accepted him as their last prophet. He was put to the cross as a test, that if you are really the Son of God, now let us see. If you really walk on water, if you really raise the dead to life again, then we will put you to the cross and see what miracles you can do or God can do on your behalf. Nothing happened. He shouted at the clouds. There was no God. But what is the need of God if a man walks on water, feeds people, thousands of people, with one loaf of bread, wakes up the dead? There was no need to call for God. He could have flied away with the cross, and that would have proved absolutely without doubt to the Jews that he was their last prophet. He was the only begotten Son of God. His helplessness on the cross shows that all the stories of miracles are simply invented. Because no contemporary source even mentions Jesus' name. Can you think a man who walks on water a man who raises dead people back to life, a man who restores eyes of the blind, limbs of the crippled, just by his touch, was not able even to carry the cross up the hill? 3 times he fell. The cross was too heavy. And 3 times they did him a good beating to get up and carry the cross. And this is the prophet, the only begotten Son of God. With Jesus, the idea of service has come into existence. Serve the poor. But why? In fact, logically, he said, "Blessed are the poor, for they shall inherit the kingdom of God." If that is true, make more people poor. The rich people cannot enter into paradise. A camel can pass through the eye of a needle, but a rich man cannot enter into the paradise gate. If that is the case, why serve the poor? If anybody needs service, it is the rich. Steal their money, make them poor so they can inherit the kingdom of God. Poverty is perfectly right according to Jesus' own statements. It is good to be poor according to Jesus. It is great to be poor. And I hate poverty and I hate Jesus for making such statements. Consoling the poor and protecting the rich and it seems Jesus is on the side of the poor. And what help he has done to the poor and what help the Christianity has done to the poor. Even in Christian countries, there is immense poverty. Even in the richest country, America, there are 3 million people on the street. In this cold winter, they are dying. What the Christians are doing for those, and they are Christians, but nobody interested in them. They are already Christians. They will inherit the kingdom of God. And America goes on sending missionaries around the world to help the poor. It's strange. They cannot help their own poor because they are already Christian. So that is the criterion. Service is meant to convert poor people because just bread and butter and clothes and medicine will purchase them. Mohammedans used to do the conversion in a different way, a very short cut, by the sword. Either be a Mohammedan or the sword is going to cut your head. Because the Quran says, the more you convert people to Mohammedanism, the more virtuous you are. And only Mohammedans will be saved. So they are cutting your head in service. They were trying hard to make you a Mohammedan because that is the only way to reach to God. You refuse. It is better to die than to be a Hindu or to be a Christian or to be a Jew. Be born again and we will see you. If not in this life, another life, you will be converted to Mohammedanism. Their way was sad. Just a simple sword hanging on your neck. And they converted. They are the second greatest religion. Christians have the most number. The second is Mohammedanism. Christianity persuades people with a little sophistication. Mohammedans were absolutely in a hurry. Christians take time. They adopt orphans. They find out leftover children in Calcutta. They bring up, they give them education, but all for the purpose to increase the power of Christianity. The whole earth has to be turned into a Christian world, then only people will be saved. Even if it is true that Jesus walked on water, what is the point of it when boats are available? It is simply stupid. What is divine in it? Even if he has managed Lazarus to be alive again, then nothing is heard about Lazarus. Only that story is there. What happened to Lazarus? He must have lived in misery and poverty and would have died in sickness, disease, old age. What is the point of your service? The similar case will help you to understand. A woman's husband died. She was young, had only one child. She wanted to commit sati. She wanted to jump in the funeral pyre with her husband. But this small child prevented her. She had to live for this small child. But then the small child died. Now it was too much. She went almost insane, asking people, is there any physician anywhere who can make my child alive? I was living only for him. Now my whole life is simply dark, because in India you cannot marry again. Particularly in those days, it was absolutely impossible. A woman cannot marry again. Such a possessiveness of the man that even if I die, you suffer, but you should not marry anyone. Such jealousy. And this is called Indian heritage by Mr. Rajiv Gandhi. It happened that Buddha was coming to the town. So people said, we don't know any physician, but Buddha is coming. That is a great chance. You take the child to Buddha and tell him that I am living for this child and the child has died. And you are such a great enlightened person. Call him back to life. Have mercy on me. So she went to Buddha. She put the dead body of the child into Buddha's feet. And she said, call him back to life. You know all the secrets of life. You have attained to the ultimate peak of existence. Can't you do a small miracle for a poor woman? Buddha said, I will do it. But there is a condition. He said, I will fulfill any condition. Buddha said, settled. The condition is you go around the town and from a house where nobody has ever died, bring few mustard seeds. That village was cultivating mustard seeds. So Buddha told, just go around. And the woman could not understand the strategy. She went to one house and they said, few mustard seeds, we can bring few bullock carts full of mustard seeds if Buddha can wake your son back to life. But our mustard seeds will not be of any help. Because not one, but thousands have died in our family. Since eternity we are here. We have seen our great-grandfather dying. We have seen our great-grandmother dying. We have seen our grandfather dying. Grandmother dying. We have seen so many deaths in our family. These mustard seeds are useless. Buddha's condition is from a house where nobody has ever died. A small village. She went to every house. Everybody was ready. How many seeds you want? But the condition is impossible. So many people have died in our family. By the evening, she became aware of the fact and the strategy of Gautam Buddha. She understood, whoever is born is going to die. So what is the point of getting the child back again? He will die again. It is better to seek yourself the eternal, which is never born and never dies. By the evening, she came empty-handed. Buddha asked, where are the mustard seeds? She laughed. In the morning, she had come crying. He laughed. He said, you tricked me. Everybody who is born is going to die. There is no family, not in this village, in the whole world, where nobody has died. I don't want my son to be awakened again into life. What is the point? After a few days, or a few months, or a few years, he will have to die again. And all these years, he will live in misery, in all kinds of anguish and anxiety. Your compassion is great that you did not wake him up back to life. Forget about the child, initiate me into the art of meditation so that I can go into the land, into the space of immortality where birth and death have never happened. Buddha said, you are a very intelligent woman. You understood the point. And I call this a miracle, not Jesus waking up Lazarus. I don't call that a miracle. Apparently that looks a miracle. But appearance is not the reality. I call Buddha's strategy a miracle. Everybody is going to die. There is no point One has to get out of birth and death. And he initiated the woman, and the woman became one of the enlightened ones of Buddha's disciples. Her urgency was such. She knew that my husband has died, my child has died, and now it is my number. Any moment, and I will be a victim of death. So there is not much time. I don't know at what moment the death is coming. So I have to be totally involved in the search, what the Buddha is telling me to do. Go inwards. Go to the very center of your being, and you will be beyond birth and death. This I call an authentic miracle. Cutting the problem from the very roots. I am serving, but my service is very subtle. I am serving by waking up people to their innermost being. That is the only miracle I consider of any work. And I am serving the poor by not deceiving them that you will inherit the kingdom of God. I am constantly saying to the world that the poor are our creation. Those who are giving charity to the churches, they should stop exploitation. Charity won't help. What charity they are giving? It is a very cunning device. They are not giving a single rupee. They are earning so much that income taxes go on becoming more and more as your income increases. There comes a point when you have to pay 100% income tax. And if you go on increasing your income, you may have to pay 125%, 150%. More than you have earned, you have to pay to the government. So this device helps. Up to the point you feel it is good to pay to the government 10%, 15%, okay. When it comes to the point of paying 100%, it is better to give in charity. Rather than to giving it to the government. It is people's money. If they had not given to charity, they would have to give it to the government. So on the exploitation of people, they are securing their bank balance in paradise. It is not their money. Nobody gives his own money. In fact, all rich people all over the world have many charity trusts of their own. Just here, Tata is one of the greatest rich people of India, amongst the three richest families. He has a great charity trust worth 40 crore rupees, And he goes on pouring into the charity trust. And it is people's money. It should go to the government. But he siphons the money, and every rich people around the world is doing the same. Give it to the church, or make your own trust, open a school in the memory of your father, open a hospital and become a great man of charity in the memory of your dead mother. At least there will be the name of your mother, there will be the name of yours, that you have made it in your mother's memory. And it is the money that is making people poor. Church is happy by receiving all charity. When I was arrested in America, and without any reason they harassed me, in their mind, I was not harassed. I enjoyed the whole trip. I saw the other side of the world, which I would have never seen. 12 days being a guest of President Ronald Reagan. And they dragged me from one jail to another. Almost I covered half of the America traveling in the government aeroplane. I passed over a city. I loved the lights of the city. I have been telling Anando that when we have more houses, soon we will have, because more people are going to come and we have to make arrangements for them. Then we will make our own street lights. I passed over a city called Salt Lake City. It is a city whose founder was killed just as they wanted to kill me, because we were also creating a city far bigger than Salt Lake City. We had 126 square miles in our hands. We could have made 3 New Yorks or 3 San Franciscos. The Salt Lake City is made by a special cult of the Christians, which separated from the Vatican. They are called the Mormons. I don't agree with them, but I love their city. Their founder was murdered by the American government, shot dead. But Mormons were Christians after all. They could not kill all the Mormons. And they are the most intelligent people in the whole Christian fold. And they have this city, Salt Lake City. 98% people in that city are Mormons. And they have a special arrangement. Every Mormon around the world every day should send $1 to their capital, Salt Lake. So they receive $1 million every day. That's how they are growing their city in such a beautiful way. Such great planning and architecture. Roads for the future. Six cars can move at least. And a road runs just in the middle of the city, straight across the whole city, so wide, and from that road, not as it happens in old cities. It was a different world because vehicles were different. In all the cities of the world, roads meet directly to the main road. That is dangerous and most of the accidents are caused because roads meet directly and from both sides, neither this side can see who is coming, neither this side can see who is coming on the other road, main road. And if they are both in speed, then the clash is bound to happen. And when a clash happens between two cars, it is never between two cars. It is at least between eight cars. Because bumper to bumper, cars are moving. In Salt Lake City, they have made a future planning. Roads meet not directly, but first the road, a small road, runs by the side of the big road for almost half a mile. So the main road traffic knows perfectly that one car is moving by the side, and then it merges slowly, slowly into the main road, not directly. They are the most intelligent people. And they have put such beautiful green and blue lights all over the city that I forget for a moment that my hands are handcuffed, that my feet are in chains, that my waist is surrounded by a very thick chain, and my hands are not only handcuffed, they are fixed with the chain surrounding my waist. So I cannot even wave my hands to friends. Even walking was difficult because they make the chains too tight on the feet. I forgot completely when I saw underneath me in the night the beautiful Salt Lake City. Everything is fresh and new, but they have changed everything that used to be in the old cities. Their lightning has consideration for people's eyes. It is blue, it is green, it is soft. It is not dangerous and hazardous for people's eyes. Their roads, you can move as much speed as you want. Not 55 miles per hour. Have you ever considered? I have been caught twice in America speeding. Because I cannot move with the speed 55 miles per hour when the car is made to move 140 miles per hour. Do you see the inconsistency of the government? You make the car to move 140 miles per hour and you make the rule that nobody can move beyond 55. Then why you create these cars? Just let them move 55 miles. There is no need to make any law. There is no need to put on every crossroad signs that you should not move beyond 55. And you are allowing the car factories to create cars which are meant to go 140 miles per hour. What kind of intelligence is ruling the world? I was moving as fast as the car could do. And when I was stopped by police cops, they said, "You are moving beyond the speed." I said, "Look at my speedometer. I cannot move beyond the speedometer." They said, "We are not concerned with your speedometer. Don't you see the boards?" I said, "When I am driving, I look ahead." And when one person is moving 140 miles per hour, do you want him to look sideways? They said, "You are a strange person." I said, "Ask your government that all factories should create cars which move only 55 miles. There will be no question of so many cops on the road." "I listen to my engine, not to your boards." They talked with each other. "What should we do?" They gave me a ticket that you have to be present into the court. I said, "It is better I don't appear in the court. Otherwise, just as you are embarrassed, your judges will be embarrassed. So my attorney will deal it. It is not much of a matter. $5. And exactly $5 were fined. And I said, "That does not matter. Once in a while, you can catch me. And why bother the court? I can give you $5 on the spot. But my speed will remain according to my speedometer." Then I had made arrangements. One car ahead of me, one car behind me. And I had made arrangements. There are mechanical devices which give you the signal that the cops are around. But I continued my speed. Only in Salt Lake City you can move freely. Or in German. Adolf Hitler will be remembered in history to make the greatest road for the first time, on which you can move with any speed you want. Rather than increasing the roads, making better roads, you prevent people from speed, and unless the car moves beyond 100, you don't have the feel of a great ecstasy. You are almost flying. In fact, Japanese scientists have discovered if 400 miles per hour is allowed, the car will rise 1 foot above the ground. And that will be real joy. Because then there will be no bumpers, no stones. You will be almost flying like a plane, just 1 foot above. In fact, Japan has invented a railway train, but Japan has not enough land. Because that railway train moves 400 miles per hour, 1 foot above the tracks. It can't stop on every station. And Japan has only possibility of having 2 stations, one from where it starts and one where it stops. The beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega. The sannyasin also wanted, whether he is allowed to criticize me, I have no control over you. But any criticism is going to be against you, not against me. It is not going to harm me at all. The whole world is criticizing me. And I am not even touched. There is no question of being harmed. So you can criticize, but remember, it will harm you. Your criticism will take you away from me. Your criticism will create a wall between me and you, and a bridge is needed, not a wall. You can criticize so many things . The whole past of humanity is available for you to criticize. And the whole world is there to criticize me. Why you bother to criticize me? Here you are not to criticize. Here you are to find out the truth. Criticism is very easy. Understanding needs intelligence, not criticism. I have told you the story by the great Russian novelist Turgenev, the idiot. In a village, there was a poor man who was thought to be an idiot by everybody. And because everybody told him that you are an idiot, he also started believing what to do. If everybody is saying, everybody cannot be wrong. So he has accepted the idea that I am an idiot. He will open his mouth and immediately somebody will say, stop. You are an idiot. You don't know anything. Keep quiet. But it was hurting him very much. A sage was passing from the village. He went to the sage. He told his miserable story. The sage said, don't be worried, my son. It is a very simple problem. All that you have to do is, whenever somebody says something, you don't say anything on your side. Just watch others saying something. Somebody says, look, what a beautiful sunset. Then you criticize. You ask, what is beauty? Why you call this sunset beautiful? I don't see any beauty. Where is beauty? Just remain consistently criticizing. Anybody says, look, that woman, how beautiful. And criticize that what is beautiful in that woman? Just a skeleton covered with flesh in a bag of skin? What do you mean? What is beauty? That stinking woman. Just open her. God was not very clever, otherwise he would have zipped. You can open the zip and look inside, and that will be enough. All beauty will be finished. You will run away so fast, you won't look backward. What happened to the beautiful woman? Or the beautiful man? Inside, you are just bones, blood, flesh. What is beauty? That says, said, remember one thing. Don't make any statement on your side. Otherwise, they will criticize. You just 1 month persist in criticizing. Just move around the town. And anybody saying anything, somebody says, service to the poor is good. Ask them what is good. Why there are poor? What do you mean by service? If death is the end, then what is the difference between the saint and the sinner? Both will die and be finished. There will be no account taken that this is a saint, don't destroy him. This is a sinner. If death is the end, as the materialists believe, then there is no question of being saintly or evil. It is all the same. Death equalizes everybody. 1 month he practiced what the sage has said. The whole town was amazed how intelligent he has become. What has happened? What a miracle. Nobody can answer his questions. They started talking about him no more. An idiot, he has become a sage. After 1 month, the sage came back. He called the young man. He said, are things okay? The young man said, great, things are not okay. absolutely great. You have given me such a secret thing. I have criticized everybody, the priests, the professors, the poets, the scholars, and they are all defeated. Now they have changed their idea. They think me that some miracle has happened. His whole personality has changed. He is no more an idiot. He is the most intelligent man, a wise man. We should be proud of. The sage said, that's good. Now keep it. Don't make any statement on your own. Just go on criticizing. Criticizing is so simple. It does not need any skill, any art, any intelligence. What you will gain by criticizing me? You will simply lose me. I am not preventing you. I am simply making things clear to you. Are you here to learn criticism, argument, logic? Or are you here to learn the art of going beyond the mind? It is your freedom. You can choose the mind or you can choose the meditation. This place is for meditation. If you choose the mind, this is not your place. Perhaps in some future life, maybe you will become more mature and understand the futility of all criticism, all agreement, all disagreement. They are all mind fucking. You have to go beyond it. The sutra, our beloved master, there was a monk who had stayed with Yakusan for 3 years and served as the head cook. Once Yakusan asked him, how long have you been here? 3 years. The monk replied, I don't know your face at all, said Yakusan. The monk did not understand what Yakusan meant and out of resentment left the monastery. The master was too compassionate on him. But he missed the point, the poor monk. Yakusan has asked him, how long have you been here? He is not asking how many years. His emphasis is on the point of here. How long you have been here? In Zen, the language takes a totally different nuance. The master is asking how long you have been in the time which is called now, in the space which is called here. How long you have been here? He is not asking how many years you have spent here. Perhaps the man has not even touched the a space called here, the time called now. So he said 3 years. That was factual. He has been in the monastery as a cook for 3 years. But that was not the question. Yakusan was not interested how many years he has been in the monastery. He was interested, have you touched the point here or not? Have you learned the art to be here or not? To be here and now, you have to be in meditation, beyond mind. Then suddenly all time disappears. You are in eternity. The very present moment becomes eternal. That was the question. When a master asks anything, it is never an ordinary thing. The words may be ordinary, but you have to listen very carefully. Where is his emphasis? Why he is asking suddenly? And because he said 3 years, the master saw that he could not understand even an simple statement in the world of Zen. That's why he said, I don't know your face at all. Again, he gave another opportunity to the person. Have you discovered your original face? Because I don't see it. I see the persona, the personality, but I don't see your original being, your original face. I don't know your face at all. And he was the cook. And the master was seeing him every day because he was serving food to him. So it has nothing to do with factuality. It has to do something with absolute truth. He was saying that you don't know how to be here. You don't know how to be in the now. That means you don't know who you are. That means you have not looked inwards behind the personality into your original face. The original face is the face of the Buddha. The original face is the face you had before your father was born. The original face is the face you had since eternity and you will have till eternity. It is your very being. It is your very life source. But instead of understanding the master's compassion, the monk did not understand what Yakusan meant. And he felt resentment that what kind of man is this? I have been serving food to him for 3 years and he says he has not seen my face. He thought it is very insulting, humiliating. Out of resentment, he left the monastery. So many poor people, poor in the spirit, by chance, by accident, come across a master, but they are bound to miss. For 3 years, Master has not asked anything to him, gave him enough time. Three years is thought to be enough time for anyone to get into the center. It is a very strange phenomenon. Perhaps you may have observed it. If you move your house, it takes 3 days to be at rest in the new house. Gautam Buddha and Mahavira, two great awakened people, did not allow their monks to stay in one place more than 3 days. Because if you stay more than 3 days, friendships arise, you can fall in love, you can start loving the place, you can start loving the food that you are getting in the place, you can become acquainted, you are no more a stranger. It takes 3 days for a stranger to be absorbed by the masses. Buddha and Mahavir were in absolute agreement on the point that no sannyasin should stay in one place for 3 days. 3 days is the last limit. After the third day, he should leave. So no attachment, no possessiveness arises. It is my experience, it takes 3 years to the laziest person. To those who are faster, it can happen in 3 seconds. But even to the laziest, if he goes on meditating in 3 years' time, he will find his original face. That is a finding of thousands of meditators. So it was after 3 years, the man has been with the master, he has been cooking, he has been listening to the master's discourses. It was time to ask him, how long you have been here? He understood how long, but he forgot the word here. The emphasis was not how long, the emphasis was on here. But out of compassion, a master gives as many chances as possible. He asked another question. I don't know your face at all. And you say you have been here for 3 years? Where is your face? Now the man became resentful. He is standing before him. And what kind of madman he is? He is asking, where is your face? He is asking about your original face, not this face that is reflected in the mirror. A face that is reflected in the heart of the master. The master knows when he encounters his disciple whether his heart reflects his original face or not. The original face is your consciousness, your witnessing, your Buddha. But this is the poverty of humanity. that you may come across, which is very rare to find a master. You may come across a master and you will misunderstand and misinterpret, and what was compassion may look to you like humiliation, insult, and you may leave the master with resentment, with anger. To be with a master, one has to be very patient. And one has to listen correctly. One has to watch where is the emphasis. The master has no concern how many years you have been here. What he is going to do with counting the years? Certainly, he is not asking about the years. He is asking about this moment. Are you here? Factually, you all seem to be here. But if your mind is wandering somewhere else, then in truth, you are not here. This face that you look in the mirror is not your original face. The original face is only a symbolic word. It does not mean face. Inside there is no face. It simply means your originality, your individuality, your essential consciousness, your very nature of being a Buddha, that is your original face. It is a metaphor. These anecdotes I am talking about not for these anecdotes' sake. I am talking about these anecdotes for you to become aware. You are with a master. And you have to listen rightly. And you have to listen silently. No agreement is needed. No disagreement is needed. No criticism is needed. Just listening peacefully, and a synchronicity arises. Suddenly you feel a merger, a meeting. So deep a meeting that you don't know who is who. Who is the disciple and who is the master? It happened to Chuang Tzu, a great master, perhaps one of the very rare ones. His disciple Li Tzu one day came and sat on the seat of the master. Then came Chuang Tzu, sat on the floor. The gathering of hundreds of monks could not believe what is happening. The master is sitting on the floor, a disciple is sitting on his seat, and the master said to the head monk, "Ring the bell for discourse." And Li Tzu gave the discourse, and master Chuang Tzu clapped and said, "Perfectly right. From now onwards, I don't have to come. You take my seat." You are my successor. Zen is such a unique phenomenon. No question of inferiority or superiority. The master is not offended. He could see the face of Lhitazo for the first time. The original face has arisen. The Buddha is awakened. That's why he has taken the seat. And it does not matter when a Buddha is arisen in a disciple, the master can retire. Chantazu never came back again to the assembly hall. Lhitazo continues. I have told you another story about Chantazu and Lhitazo. It is worth remembering again in this context. One day Chantazu woke up in the morning. It is after this incident that I told you. Although he was not coming to the assembly hall, but his disciples were missing him. Lhitazo had become awakened, but he was not the same quality. He was still new. He was not so articulate. He has entered into Buddhahood just now, while Chantazu has been living in that state for many, many years. So disciples will listen to Lhitazo, but will still go to Chantazu's room just to touch his feet or just to sit by his side. One day morning he woke up and almost 12 disciples were there because he was late. It has never happened. Is he sick? He is getting old. So they were concerned. But he woke up and he called the disciples in. He said, I am in a difficulty, that's why I am late. Do you promise me to help me to get out of the difficulty? They said, we will do anything, even if our life is needed. It is in your hands. Just tell us. He said, no, it is not a question of taking your life. In the night, I dreamt that I have become a butterfly. All the disciples laughed. They said, this is not a problem. We all dream of many things. Butterfly? Now you are awake, that is not a question. Finished, the dream is no more. He said, no, it is not finished. Now it starts the question. If Chantazu can dream in his sleep that he has become a butterfly, cannot the butterfly in her sleep dream that she is Chantazu? Now who I am? A butterfly dreaming to be Chantazu? Or I am really Chantazu? That is the problem. It is absolutely right. If you can dream to be a butterfly, what is wrong in butterfly dreaming you? The disciples looked at each other, what to do? This is nonsense. But you cannot tell the master that this is nonsense. And he is making out of this nonsense very sensible question. They said,
If you cannot solve it, you cannot expect us unenlightened, unconscious people to solve it. He said, ring the bell and call the whole monastery. There were at least 1500 monks. They came running, what has happened? Because it was very rare. The bell was ring always in the assembly hall, not in the cottage of the master. They all surrounded those 12 disciples, told them that our master is in a difficulty. They all laughed first. They said, don't laugh. We have also laughed, but he is really very sad, very serious. We have never seen him so serious. He is not a serious man at all. But his question seems to be relevant. As we pondered over it, it looks absolutely right to wonder. 1500 monks looked at each other. There was great silence. Li Tazu was not present. He has gone to the city for some work. He came back right in time. The gathering of the monks allowed him to enter in the cottage. He said, what is the problem? Why you are gathered here? They told him the problem. He did not enter into the cottage. He went out. He's going out. The monk said, where are you going? You are needed. You have to help the master. He said, I am going to help him. He went to the well. It was cold winter morning. He pulled out ice cold water into a bucket and he went into the cottage and poured the whole bucket on Chuang Tzu. And Chuang Tzu jumped out of the bed. He said, wait, the problem is solved. I am Chuang Tzu. But where you have been? If you were not here, I would have remained in my bed my whole life. Where you have been? He said, are you awake or I have to bring another bucket? He said, no, there is no need for another bucket. One bucket is enough to prove that I am not butterfly. The butterfly would have died. I am certainly Chuang Tzu. Just tell all the monks, don't be worried. The problem is solved. But you should not be so strange, bringing such cold water. At least you could have warmed the water. I am an old man, you don't understand. I was just waiting for you whether you can solve it or not. You are really my successor. You have rightly taken my seat. Don't be worried. Slowly, slowly you will learn. And I will manage many situations for you to learn. This was one of the situations. The master functions in different ways and different people. Different masters are creating different devices, but all for the sake of finding the truth. Never get resentful. Never be angry. Never feel insulted. The master never means to humiliate anyone. He wants everyone to be elevated to the ultimate status of a Gautam Buddha. Another monk once said to Yaku-san, "I have a doubt. Please, master, clear it away." Yaku-san said, "Then come to me at the regular discourse." That night, seated for discourse, Yaku-san addressed the assembly of monks in front of him, saying, "Tonight, a monk will clear his doubt away. Where are you? Come up here." He is asking the same monk who had asked him in the morning, "I have a doubt. Please, master, clear it away." He is so certain to clear it away that without clearing it, he is telling to the assembly, "Tonight, a monk will clear his doubt away. Where are you? Come up here." The monk arose and came forward. No sooner had he reached the master than Yaku-san knocked him down and immediately returned to his room. The doubt is clear. The ego is settled. And the returning to the room has been a symbol in Zen for almost since Bodhidharma. It means doubt is part of the mind. I have settled it. I am returning to my room. You return to your own inner shrine. From different angles, for different kind of people, the master manages. He has only two hands, but he functions almost like thousands of hands. He has only two eyes, but functions like thousands of eyes. So Haku wrote, "Cuckoo calling, today of all days, when no one is here." So Haku was meditating for many months on a koan. What is the sound of one hand clapping? Now, one hand clapping cannot make any sound. The very word clapping means two things are needed. Two hands can clap, but one hand? These are called koans. They are not puzzles that you can solve. They are insoluble. You can dissolve them, but you cannot solve them. And meditation dissolves them. So for months he has been meditating. And every once in a while, he will hear something. A cool breeze passing through the pine trees, making a subtle sound and music. And he will think, perhaps this is it. And he will run to the master. But before he has uttered, the master will close the door. Just in his face. And shout from inside, go back and meditate. This is not the sound. So Haku will think, what is the matter? I have not even said anything. And he has refused already. But the master is right. Because no answer can be right. So there is no question. Whatever he brings is wrong. Till he stops bringing. Many times, master will slap him when he will say that this is the sound I have heard, bamboos cracking. And the master will say, go back. And this day it happened. Cuckoo calling. At another time, he may have run to the master, saying to him, it is the call of the cuckoo. The sound of the cuckoo. But today it is different. Cuckoo calling. Today of all days, when no one is here, he has dissolved his mind, and with the mind the koan is dissolved, there is no question to be solved, he is no more here. He did not run to the master, but the master in the middle of the night suddenly ran towards Sohaku. When the cuckoo was still calling, master was waiting that he may come, but he has not come. That means he has dissolved the question. The master reached to Sohaku, who was sitting silently, and the cuckoo was still calling. And Sohaku was so silent and so peaceful, surrounded by such serenity. The master shook him. He opened his eyes, didn't say a single word, just touched the feet of the master. And the master said, so you have heard. Come on. Now you can stay with me in my cottage. I have been looking towards you with great hope. All those slaps, you know, I am old. And it hurts my hand more than your face. All those beatings, and you don't understand that my hand hurts the whole night. You are young. I am in a hurry. My death is very close. I want it before my death. You have dissolved the koan, the sound of one hand clapping. Today it happened. Out of all days, the cuckoo is calling. But now I can see. You are no more there. Your mind is silent. Your ego is gone. A peace, a great peace, a tremendous transformation from mind to no mind has happened. I declare you my successor. Sohaku's master died the next day. He was hanging around, just hoping and waiting and hitting hard that Sohaku understands. He had many disciples, but Sohaku was the most promising because he is taken every hit with great gratitude, bowing down, touching his feet, never a single resentment, never anger, never a feeling of humiliation, never a feeling of frustration. That for months together I have been coming and coming and coming, and he goes on rejecting. Even he does not hear my answer and already rejects it before I have opened my mouth. Now I know. No answer was going to be the answer. Only no mind could be the answer. No mind is the sound of one hand clapping. Cuckoo calling, today of all days when no one is here. A beautiful, very beautiful haiku to remember. Manisa's question. Our beloved master, is it because of a refusal to encounter the reality of death that there is a reluctance to meditate? Manisa. Yes. Because meditation and death are very similar. In death, you enter reluctantly, unwillingly. That's why you fall unconscious, in a coma. In meditation, you are going with full consciousness, with great totality of being, on your own accord. It is the same point that you will pass in death also. But if you have moved to the center before death, then death is no more a fear. You know it. You have died many times whenever you touched your center, and you have gone again into a resurrection. Every meditation is a death and a resurrection. You go to the point where death takes people unconsciously. You go consciously. That is the only difference. The point is the same. From the same center, death will take you into another womb if you are unconscious. If you are conscious doing meditation, then death is the same. You will not resist death. You will go dancing with death to the center. It is a well-known path. You have traveled on it for thousands of times. It is a well-known door. You know it perfectly. Where death is going, you are going rejoicing, dancing, singing. Because you know that door leads you into eternity, into cosmos. Consciously, if you die, you will not enter into another womb. You will not be born again, because birth is nothing but the beginning of death. You will not be born, that means you will never die again. You have reached to your original being. you have become a Buddha. The fear of death prevents people into inquiring deeply into themselves. I have come across a man whose wife has brought to me, he looked very nervous. The wife told me that something has happened to him. He does not sleep. And he does not allow anybody else in the house to sleep. Even neighbors are getting tired. Because just to keep awake, he goes to every room, knocks on the door, asks the wife or the son or the son's wife or the daughter, are you asleep? But when you ask somebody, are you asleep? You have broken the person's sleep. He has to answer, yes, I am asleep, but now I am awake. And he will put the radio on full volume just to keep himself awake, and he will walk in the veranda and will keep the neighbors awake. They will shout and he will shout at them. I said, what you are afraid of? He said, I am afraid that if I go to sleep, what is the guarantee that I will wake up? I may die in my sleep. I want to keep awake. Death is my fear. I had to teach him meditation. 6 months he continued to come to my meditation class. And once he started feeling some inner space touching, he became absolutely unafraid. His wife came to me, he said, what miracle you have done? You have not given him any medicine. I have said, I have given him some medicine. Because the word meditation and meditation and medicine come from the same root. Medicine cures your body, meditation cures your consciousness. They are both treatments. One is physical, another is spiritual. I said, I have given medicine. He will sleep now. And I inquired after a few days passing by his house. It was afternoon. The wife said, now he sleeps even in the day. You have created another trouble. Now Ismail's children are looking after the store that he runs. And he said, I don't bother. His sleep is so good. And I have learned the art how to transform the sleep into meditation. The whole night I am rejoicing and I cannot miss my afternoon nap. It is a meditation. And the story. Children are taken perfectly well, the care of the customers. In fact, better than me, customers were haggling about price with me. With the children, they don't haggle. The poor children, the father first was mad. He won't sleep. Now he is more mad. He sleeps the day. He sleeps in the night. And poor children have to take care. So they will not haggle. The children were earning better, getting more prizes. So he said, things are going perfectly well. Why you bother me? And if you bother me much, I will take you all to my master. You have to learn how to sleep and you have to learn how to meditate. Both are the same. In sleep also you go to the same death. Not the whole night. In 8 hours sleep, 6 hours you dream. Not continuously. Few breaks here and there for 2 hours. For 2 hours, you are at the very center of your being. That's what rejuvenates you. That's what brings a new freshness to your face and to your eyes in the morning. I myself cannot sleep at all. The whole night. Not a wink. That reminds me a beautiful anecdote. On the margin. One English lord, a member of the British Parliament, was suspicious of another lord that he is having a love affair with his wife. But English are very mannerly. Even in situations where one forgets, tends to forget manner and etiquette, they will manage. He asked the lord, did you sleep with my wife last night, sir? And his friend said, not a wink. That is my situation. My personal physician, Amrito, has to manage a CD player that plays music continuously the whole night. So that I can enjoy at least the music. Otherwise, I am just lying down for 30 years. I have not slept. But do you see my eyes tired or anything? My own understanding is that sleep is a habit. It is not necessity. It is a habit. For millions of years, men remained in the dark caves in the night with no fire, no light. There was no other alternative than to fall asleep. Those millions of years, the habit has become so deeply rooted that we go on sleeping. But my own understanding is that I have not slept for 30 years, not dreamt for 30 years. It has not in any way disturbed anything in me. The whole sleep is a silent meditation. and with a beautiful music in the background, the whole night is such a blissful, such an ecstatic experience. Manisa, it is the fear of death that people avoid meditation. But it is only meditation that can take you beyond the fear of death. That is the irony of the case. You are afraid of meditation because of death, but you don't know it is only meditation that can make you fearless of death, because to the meditator there is no death. Only life, and life divine, and life eternal. It is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. It is the last day of the holiday season in Goa. And tomorrow, gorgeous Gloria and Sardar Gurdayal Singh will be going their separate ways as their seaside friendship comes to an end. That night, in Sardar Gurdayal Singh's hotel room, Gloria leans close to Sardarji's ear and whispers, "Since this is our last chance together, I would like to do something different tonight." "Okay," agrees Sardar Gurdayal Singh. "Then you try to kiss me and I will slap your face." Jimmy Beckers, praise the Lord, TV church has not been making much money ever since Jimmy got out of jail. He is sitting in his living room one day when his wife, Tammy, comes home wearing an expensive new dress. "My God," shouts Becker, "you know, we are broke. You promised not to buy any new clothes this month. What made you do it?" "I'm sorry, sugar," replies Tammy, "but the devil tempted me." It is the same Becker, you know, who has been tempted by the devil to make love to his secretary and to make love to his assistant priest. Now he is trying hard to get back, but it is difficult. The whole country knows that this man has been deceiving for years, teaching celibacy to the television onlookers, and he had millions of people listening to him, one of the America's most prominent TV preachers. The wife said, "I'm sorry, sugar. The devil tempted me." "Just the same as the devil tempted you." "The devil?" shouts Jimmy. "So why did not you say to him, 'Get thee behind me, Satan, like a good Christian woman. That's what Jesus used to do. The devil used to tempt him. It is strange. I have been looking for devil my whole life. And I have not found him. I wanted to tempt him. But Jesus was continuously tempted by the devil, and he always said to the devil, "Go behind me." So Becker told his wife, just like a good Christian, "Why did not you say to the devil, 'Get thee behind me, Satan'?" "I did," replies Tammy. "But then he whispered to me, 'Honey, it fits you beautifully from behind.'" Abir Bhava is going on a shopping trip. The devil will tempt her. So remember, when Gautam the Buddha auditorium becomes too small to contain all the seekers coming to Pune, our beloved master goes on a tour of the universe looking for a new site. At one stop, he arrives at the pearly gates and is greeted by Saint Peter. The Christian saint takes one look at the man before him and nearly faints. "My God, you up here, and you want a 2-week tourist visa?" cries Peter. "I must have a talk with God first." And Saint Peter scuttles away to find God Almighty. God is not very pleased at Saint Peter's news, and after a lot of deep thought, he tells Saint Peter, "Okay, he can stay for a short while, but only on one condition. No discourses." A couple of weeks later, God runs into Saint Peter again. "How is everything going with you know who?" "Ask God, is everything all right?" "Just great, Swamiji," replies Saint Peter. "Everything is Yahoo."
be silent. Close your eyes and feel your body to be completely frozen. This is the right moment to look inwards with your whole life energy, with your total consciousness, and with an urgency as if this is going to be your last moment on the earth. Faster and faster, closer you come to your center, closer you are to yourself, closer you are to the godliness of existence, closer you are to your original face, the Buddha, centered, you are the most blessed people on the earth this moment. A great silence descends over you. A deep peace arises within, and flowers starts showering like rain. You have found your nature, your Buddha, your door to the cosmos. Remember only one thing. The only one thing makes the Buddha, that is witnessing. Witness. You are not the body. Witness, you are not the mind. Witness, you are not the seven subtle bodies inside you. You are only a witness purely in awareness, this awareness will bring you the transformation, the truth, the beauty, all the splendor of existence. I can see your original faces. I can see you are here and now. Just keep this status around the clock. Whenever you remember, be here and now. Sometimes you will forget. Don't repent. Don't waste time in repentance. When you remember again, start being here and now. When you are 24 hours here and now, you will be enlightened. You will be the Buddha. Not only for a few moments, but for eternity. Nivedana, relax, but remember to continue witnessing. This witnessing is the secret, most golden key, the master key that opens all the doors of the mysteries and the secrets of existence. As you relax, as your consciousness becomes more and more settled, the separation of you starts melting. Gautam the Buddha auditorium is turning into an ocean. 10,000 Buddhas melting into the oceanic experience of one cosmos. This is the only religious experience, the oceanic experience. There is no other religion other than this. All the scriptures are just commentaries, non-essential. The essential phenomenon is this oceanic experience of dissolving yourself into the ultimate. A great song will arise in you, and without any movement you will feel a great dance. You will hear the one hand clapping. You are no more, only the existence is. Gather as much flowers and fragrance and blessings and beatitudes and benediction as you can. You have to bring them. You have to bring them from your center to the circumference of your life and persuade the Buddha. Inch by inch, he is coming closer. It is your very nature. One day, one golden day, you will disappear, and only the Buddha will remain in place of you. That will be the greatest height of your blossoming. The greatest golden moment of your thousands of lives. Beyond that is only the cosmos. First become the Buddha. This is called Nirvana. Then take a jump into the cosmos and disappear into the blue sky. This is called Mahaparinirvana, the great enlightenment. The first is called the enlightenment. The second is called the great enlightenment. Then you are not even the Buddha is not only the existence. with all its glory, with all its majesty, with all its flowers blossoming, its beauty, its truth, its divineness, is spread all over the cosmos. And you will become one with the whole, not part of the whole. To become one with the whole is the only holiness. Nibbidano, come back. But come back as Buddhas, with the same gesture, with the same grace, with the same silence, with the same ecstasy. Just sit down for a few seconds to remember the golden path you have traveled, to remember your original face that you have encountered, and watch, the Buddha has come a little more closer to you. It is not long before the spring will come, you will melt away, and only the Buddha remains. Then the second step is very simple. I teach only the first step. The second step you can take any time. Or if you want to wait, the second step will happen in your death. This I call straight to the point of enlightenment. Okay, Manisha?
Yes, beloved Master.
Thank you.